I was personally harmed by how I was raised in the church, and I want to, if I can, help people to not be hurt the way I was. And I think the most important part of that is to empower people to not offload their morality onto an external source, to be able to make their own moral judgments. I'm Justin, and this is my story.
You're listening to Becoming Wordless, a podcast series featuring stories from people who have made the decision to walk away from Mormonism. Each episode features an interview with one person sharing their story. Our aim is to explore their experience in a respectful and thoughtful way for all people, regardless of your connection to Mormonism. And now, join us as Oliver sits down with Justin to share his story.
It's great to have you here to share your story on Becoming Wordless, Justin. I wanted to start off just getting to know a little bit about you. Share a little bit about your upbringing and what Mormonism meant to you and what role it played in your life as you were growing up.
Of course, and thank you for having me. It's great to be here. I was born in the church in Provo while my parents were at BYU, as I think might be a common theme to a lot of people listening to this.
One might say it's almost a stereotype.
Inaccurate one. So I don't have any memory of the church not being involved in my life. It was literally there from my earliest memories. My mother was also born in the church, and her family goes back to the Trek West. My father is the only convert in his family. He's also Korean, so I'm from a mixed-race household, and that's a little bit breaking from the mold. But other than that, I think we were a pretty typical devout Mormon family in a lot of ways. We did all of the big things. We went to church to every meeting every Sunday. We did as often as we could family home evening. We did scripture study. We prayed together. We obeyed the Sabbath. Just all of the big things that you could expect from a devout family, that's what we did. And I don't think we were terribly conservative compared to some of the stories that you'll hear, but devout and on the conservative side, yes, that's how my family was.
When you say conservative, what do you mean?
Conservative values and also taking all of the teaching and doctrine pretty seriously. So these aren't just suggestions. The Word of Wisdom is not just a suggestion. It is a very real thing with very real moral consequences. And so you have to do it or you're being bad.
Okay. So did you consider yourself to have a testimony of the church as a child?
As a child, I don't think I did. And I say that for two reasons. The first is I think when I was very young, I didn't know enough to even really understand that you could believe other things. Right?
Say some more about that.
This is just the way it is. This is of course how it is. How could you possibly believe something else? It wasn't until I was almost a teenager, I think, that I really understood that you could believe other things.
What was it like when you first started to understand that as a teenager?
It didn't make sense to me at first. I remember when I was young, maybe 9 or 10, just, you believe the wrong thing. You're just not right, right? The way I believe is obviously the right one. But not too long after that, when I think it just hit me like, well, you can believe all sorts of things and people do believe all sorts of things. And that was the first time I'd really reflected on what I believe. And I realized I don't believe in God. I was probably 11.
Oh my goodness.
When it happened, hit me the first time. I remember talking to my mother about it. Like, I don't think I do. And she said to me, well, that's a lot of people don't, and you need to pray and you need to ask and see if this is something that's real. And I think that was probably the best way from a Mormon perspective that you could possibly answer that. Just mm-hmm. I wasn't castigated. I wasn't told I was wrong. I was told to go and learn for myself. And I had reasoned as a kid, my parents are good people. A lot of the people I went to church with are good people. I thought I can trust them. They wouldn't lie to me. There are plenty of very intelligent people that I knew who are Mormon. So there just must be something that I'm missing. And so I was very willing to go and to lean on their faith, I guess. But when I realized that I can't say I know to these things that everyone says every Sunday. When I said, I can't actually say that, I think that's what made me realize for the first time, oh, there's something that I'm not getting, something that's not really lining up for me that it is for other people.
So from that time on, how did your interaction with Mormonism evolve?
So I always just wanted to be a very good kid. I wanted to be good. I wanted to do the right thing. And I completely internalized the teachings that the church said, these are the things that make you good. I 100% internalized that. So I tried very, very hard to go and be a good Mormon boy. Even though I, even from a young age, I really disliked it. I never felt happy or that I fit in or felt comfort in the worship. But I was taught, this is what makes you good. This is the right thing to do. This is what you need to do to get back to heaven. And so I tried to do it earnestly.
How did you reconcile? How did you get by with those two seemingly contradictory ideas in your head?
Well, honestly, I just wasn't doing enough. Because if I was doing enough, then I'd be happy.
Wow.
And that is a teaching that stood out to me, that if you are doing the right thing, you will be happy. That your sorrows will be swallowed up in the joy of Christ, is what it says in the Book of Alma. And that's something I earnestly believed. So if I'm not happy, it's my fault. It's because I haven't done enough.
That's such a heavy thing to carry.
Especially when you're 10.
Yeah. I don't know if I was thinking of those types of things when I was 10.
I don't know that, I don't know how mature or developed my thoughts on this were, but these were things that I thought from a very young age. And I do remember that.
So how did that impact you throughout your teenage years?
Well, shortly after that is when I hit puberty and started engaging the activities that come with that. And so, of course, I also heard loud and clear all of the teachings about the law of chastity. And so any feeling that I had was really subsumed in the, just this intense guilt that I felt. And I could always say, of course, I'm not happy. I'm masturbating. What's wrong with me that I can't stop? Yeah. I cried myself to sleep because I couldn't stop, because I was 12, right? And so that, I think, was, you know, happened at the perfect time to completely derail that whole line of thought and to have a very good excuse for me to really blame myself for why I was so miserable.
The way you used perfect doesn't sound like the way we use perfect to describe a fictional character like Mary Poppins. Is that correct?
Correct. It was not practically perfect in every way.
But it was perfectly timed to create this outcome where you said, you know, it was this internalizing of the guilt. Mm-hmm. And so did that continue through your teenage years, or were there any changes in the way that you related to the church up until the time you left home?
So during my adolescence, I doubled down and I threw myself into trying to be the best Mormon I could be. Earnestly, I really did. I also grew more miserable as it went on. But again, I had the perfect excuse. I'm looking at pornography. I'm masturbating. Clearly, yeah. It's my fault.
Yeah.
And I was the kid who was honest enough to admit it. So I was the one going to the bishop and none of the other boys were. And so clearly I was the one in the ward who had a problem. I was the one who was broken.
Yeah.
And that is unfortunately what my parents took away from it. Like, I was the only one apparently who was struggling. No, I was just the only one being honest.
Yeah. At the time, did you believe that no one else was quote unquote struggling with this as well?
I thought about it a lot. I didn't know exactly what to think, but I was convinced that I'm apparently worse than everyone else.
Yeah.
Apparently. It always tickled in the back of my brain that this isn't adding up. I can't be the only one that this has happened to.
Yeah. So how did that impact you through the rest of your teenage years?
So I became incredibly depressed. I think a lot of the self-loathing that I feel, which is not, there are other sources to this that I know, but this was a big, I would say, catalyst, which kind of threw that into full gear. And it really taught me, I think, two things. First, to lie, because of course I'm going to at some point. Instead of being shamed, instead of having to admit something which I've been told multiple times is second only to murder, of course I'm going to start learning how to lie. And the second thing was to associate any sort of sexual feeling I had myself with being bad. And I ended up demonizing my own sexuality wholesale.
Yeah.
100%. Any sexual expression whatsoever, I thought was bad. And I had to repress it, otherwise I was being bad.
Yeah. So you're still attending church every Sunday through these teenage years, is that correct?
Yes.
And you have this entire emotional sort of internal dialogue going on, causing you pain. Was this something that was noticed by family, friends, or church leaders?
Yes, although the policy seemed to be ignore it and pretend it doesn't exist. There were a few times when a young men's leader tried to reach out to me. I was too depressed and filled with teenage angst on top of this kind of sexual shaming angst to really reciprocate any of that. But I recognized that they heeded try. My parents, they sent me to a therapist who was Mormon, and that was not helpful. It was the exact same messages that I was getting at church, and it didn't make a difference. And so I think my parents were the ones sending me to the bishop a lot of the time. They were convinced that the problem was me being a teenage boy, not that the teachings about sexual shaming are what are making me so miserable in the first place, on top of everything else. And so I think they were trying the best that they knew how. It was just helping in the exact wrong direction.
You know, we didn't mention at the top, siblings. Did you have any other siblings?
I have one younger sister.
Okay, so you're the only example of a teenage boy that your parents are seeing, right?
I think that's fair. I'm not just the oldest son, I'm the oldest grandson on both sides.
Wow.
So I was the first to do any of this, and with the general lack of education that exists within the Mormon culture, I don't know that anyone really knew what to expect, especially since my father's a convert.
Yeah.
And so even though he did all the same things, he was taught that, oh, that was all bad, and you just didn't know better at the time.
Yeah.
But if you teach your, I assume this is what he would have thought, if you teach your children better, they won't do that.
Yeah. So once you left high school, did you, what came next for you?
It was just one summer and then my mission.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you went out of high school straight on to a mission.
After 4 months, I think.
And how did you feel about going on a mission?
I never wanted to.
Did you consider not going?
No, because I believed that was what God wanted me to do. Every worthy young man will serve an honorable full-time mission, right? And I said, well, this is apparently what God wants. And if God wants it, I will do it. I don't want to, but I'll do it.
There seems to be a very strong sense of obligation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that this desire has ever even really left me, but all I really wanted to do was to be good, to do what I thought was the right thing to do. And at least how I interpreted it, the Mormon framework gave a very black and white and very delineated pathway of these are the things you do to be good.
Yeah.
And so I have to do all of these things or I'm not. So I put in my papers and I said I didn't want. The only thing I want is I don't want to go to Utah. And I was called to Salt Lake City South, Spanish speaking.
So how did you feel about being called to the Salt Lake City South mission, Spanish speaking?
I was hiking a mountain when my mission papers came in. My parents called me saying that it had arrived. I'd actually been dreading it, that actually happening. So I came home. My friends were there because I was hiking with my friends and I was reading through the paperwork. I couldn't even finish saying it. I was just furious. I felt betrayed. I felt
betrayed. What do you mean?
That, you know, God clearly knows me and my heart. Not only have I explicitly expressed many times that I don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
I have family that lives there. Mm-hmm. I have friends that live there. I don't like Utah. I never had.
Well, last we knew, you were born in Provo. Did your family leave Provo at some point?
Yes. So I don't have any memories of Provo as a child, but I had been back many times because I have extended family there.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up as a kid in Pennsylvania, and then for the rest of it in the Seattle area.
So hiking a mountain in the Seattle area, come home, open mission call. When you can't finish the sentence, what happened?
I stormed off, and I wouldn't talk to anyone for a while.
Take a moment.
Yeah, apparently I'm still not quite over this. I just remember feeling so hurt, so incredibly hurt, that I couldn't have this. I couldn't even get the one thing I said I didn't want. It just felt like a betrayal. And that was the closest I ever came at that point in my life to challenging kind of the church's system of deference. I thought about writing in and saying, no, I will not accept this mission call. Mm-hmm. But no, I said, this is where God wants me, apparently, so I'll go. And so I went.
How was your mission experience?
It was awful. My mission did more to harm my opinion of and faith in the church than probably any other thing could have. I interacted on several occasions with people high up in the church bureaucracy, including at the time the man who was in charge of the entire LDS mission department.
Uh-huh.
And I had an incredibly negative experience with him. And I remember fundamentally disagreeing with some of the things he was saying. And so knowing that this comes from the head of the entire missionary department, something which I just say is wrong. This is wrong. This is incorrect. But if the head of the entire LDS mission department is wrong, that means that it's not operating according to divine revelation. It's just not.
So this interaction took you to a place where all of a sudden you could no longer see the organization of the church as something divinely inspired.
At least the missionary department. Wow. That didn't generalize over to the structure as a whole until later.
So was there anything else that happened on your mission that you felt really contributed to or had other impacts on your view of the church and your testimony?
More than we have time to get into here. I think a good way to sum this up would be to say that I was instructed on many occasions to do things which I personally morally objected to,
yeah,
or which I felt were profoundly dishonest.
Yeah.
Other people might not view it that way, but I do.
Yeah.
And at that point, I trusted that the priesthood leadership was legitimate, existed for a reason, and that my job was to show deference and obey. And I ended up participating in things which I profoundly regret now.
Wow. So your trust here was almost absolute.
I don't know that I trusted absolutely. I think I believed that my job was to obey. Obedience is the first law of heaven. And again, these are teachings which I internalized.
Yeah. Like you believed this about obedience at the time, and yet were conflicted about.
Yes. And it's led to some of the biggest regrets that I still hold.
Yeah.
Also, the first counselor for my first mission president was, after he was released, arrested for fraud and thrown in jail.
So a lot of disillusioning experiences.
Yes.
On your mission.
And again, just interacting day in and day out with the church hierarchical structure and seeing all of the problems and flaws. Mm-hmm. And I just recognized, like, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Ethically, sure, but more than that, it's just this isn't what it's purporting to be.
This isn't what you always thought it was.
Yeah. But the teaching that exists is that everyone is called by God to their individual position. They're there for a reason. They receive revelation for those over whom they have stewardship. It's all there according to plan. And I think anyone who spends enough time there and is honest will say, that's not true.
What did it feel like when you realized that wasn't true?
I don't know that it was any single event that really did it. There were bigger things. For example, this gentleman who was over the church missionary program.
Putting aside specific experiences, like once the culmination of experiences had happened and you realized, wow, like this isn't what I thought it was. How did that feel?
It was, in a way, it felt validated because it meant that it wasn't me who was the problem. I wasn't the monkey wrench in this perfectly meshing system of cogs. On the other hand, it made me mad. It made me mad that people who knew that it wasn't this divinely inspired system pretended that it was, and that other people were duped. It made me angry.
Made you angry, yeah. So by the time you came home from your mission, were you still sitting with that sense of validation and that sense of anger?
My mission broke me. I still have PTSD from it. I was non-functional for several months afterward. And so more than anything else, I just felt broken. It wasn't until afterward that I started feeling very, very angry. Very angry. And you can't, this might be different now, but when I came home, it was still not acceptable to say my mission wasn't wonderful. And I was told explicitly by many different local church leaders when I was at BYU, if you didn't like your mission, you must have been sinning. It's your fault. You are the reason that you didn't have a good experience. And at that point, I knew that was wrong. I wasn't able to swallow that anymore, that it was my fault. I knew it was wrong.
So by the end of your mission, where would you say you were in your view of the church as a whole?
So a few things which might have been useful to cover before. I had never received a witness or testimony or however you want to express it, of the Book of Mormon, of Joseph Smith, of the Modern Prophets, of any of these things. Yeah. I had prayed about all these things many, many times, and the heavens were silent. More than that, though, I gave everything I had on my mission. Everything. I gave my heart and soul. I worked every single day. I worked when I was so sick that I couldn't sleep through the night. I worked every P day. I worked the day my parents came to pick me up.
Wow.
I worked every single day, and I gave it everything. And at the end of that, the only thing that came back was just pain and this profound feeling of loss and betrayal. And so when I came back, I felt broken. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways I still am. I think that giving everything that I had with honestly an open heart and being hurt in return repeatedly, over time, that did something to me, which I don't think I've recovered from, which I've gone to therapy for, and which profoundly impacted really every aspect of my life afterward in a negative way.
So you've come home from a mission, and what happened next for you in life?
Yes, I came home October. And I had already been accepted to BYU starting in January. So I had very little time to really do any sort of recovery. And I was just right back into school.
Were you still an active member of the church?
Yes, I was active. I met my wife while I was at BYU. I was married in the temple. Right. I accepted every calling I was given. I went to institute. What I had said to myself at this point was that I will do all of the things which I've been taught I need to do in order to be happy, to feel peace, to feel fulfilled. I had said on my mission, I need to figure this out. And I thought, well, if to really be honest about that, I need to go and do all the things which are required. And so I did.
Wow.
And when I had done that and came out on the other side and realized I feel even worse, I'm even more miserable.
So some people talk about the doing all the things period as like a doubling down. Do you feel like this was a doubling down phase? Like, I'm going to give this all I got?
Yeah, I've been templing down since I was 14. Yes, I tried to get to the temple as much as I could. Yeah. I was reading scriptures, well, religiously.
Always love a good pun. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I was trying as hard as I could to try to go and make it somehow.
So during this time, do you open up to anyone about how you feel about the church or your mission experience?
To several people. My wife, she was very supportive. My parents, who were sympathetic, but it just didn't fit into their paradigm of how that could be possible.
Didn't fit into their worldview.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And then to many of my local leaders at BYU.
Oh, so this is something that you brought up with church leaders.
Because I was furious. I was filled with anger, and I knew that was bad. Mm-hmm. I knew it wasn't healthy, and I went in with the attitude of I need to resolve these issues. Yeah. To really just let my heart bear and try to go and find a way for me to be okay with what had happened. But
specifically what had happened on your mission.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was consistently told, I think from every leader I spoke to, I mentioned this before, I was the one to blame. I must have been sinning. I must have not repented of something. I must not have been devout enough. And that wasn't true.
Wow. So did it come to a head at some moment? You know, what brought you to that point that you knew that you would walk away from Mormonism?
There was a specific time when that happened. I had grown increasingly angry and increasingly bitter. And I made an appointment with my bishop at the time. I think I had a new one every semester just because of how words shuffled around.
Mm-hmm. This is while you were a student at BYU.
Yes. Okay. And I went, and after I had shared what I was feeling, I don't feel that I was ever given a chance to go and talk anymore or that I was even heard. I don't remember being asked anything. I don't remember being asked to clarify it or contribute anything. I sat there and was talked at for about 20 minutes. And then at a certain point, I just got up and I left.
You didn't say anything?
No. I knew I wasn't coming back. And I knew that I had reached a point where I couldn't be flexible anymore. I had reached my breaking point.
Wow. So how did this impact your life?
Well, the immediate impact was quite positive. I didn't have to go to church anymore. I didn't have to wear my garments. I didn't have to read my scriptures. I did for a time. I dropped these things one by one. Uh-huh. over a couple years.
Okay.
But just the relief of saying, I don't have to do this anymore. I can make a choice to do what I want and not have to go and be told what to do and obey.
Yeah.
That was such a good feeling. It took a bit for the guilt to go away. Yeah. But once it did, I just felt this immense relief. I don't know that I remember any point before that in my life when I didn't feel just immense guilt and shame over not being good enough.
Yeah. It's so funny sitting here talking to you because I can literally see a change in your affect. It's just etched all over your face. You know, it's such an emotion that just powerfully is hitting me, you know, across my kitchen table right now. And it's a beautiful feeling to see in a human.
I'm glad you think so.
So what happened in your life next?
Well, I'm still at BYU.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
I believe it was my third year at BYU when I just stopped going. And I won that bishop roulette because the next bishop I had after that one was very content to just go and sign off on my ecclesiastical endorsement and let me go on my way.
Fascinating. So, but you're able to finish your studies at BYU.
I showed up once a semester for the interview.
Yeah.
And he dealt with it with an amazing amount of compassion, I would say. And I'm very grateful for that.
And how did your wife feel about this?
She probably liked the church less than I did.
Oh, interesting.
So that wasn't a big deal for her.
And would she also stay home with you?
Oh, yeah. She stopped going before I did.
Got it.
So I graduate from BYU. We move to Washington State and in with my parents, actually. And as far as the church goes, my parents kind of play a don't ask, don't tell kind of policy thing.
They could tell you're not going to church on Sunday, right?
Oh, clearly. Uh-huh. And I hadn't at all been public about not believing or not wanting to do anything. But, you know, it'd be pretty obvious. I'm not wearing my garments, right? I'm not doing any of these churchy things.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't ever say anything about it. They were never bad about it, about that, or about the fact that I'm not straight. So,
was this something you realized around this time?
Yes. So I'm not gay. I'm what I would say queer. I'm attracted to any combination of gender and sexual identity.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that until several years into my marriage.
Wow.
Neither did my, and I have permission to say this, neither did my ex-wife.
She didn't realize this about you or?
About me or about herself. She is also queer.
Oh, wow.
Which is probably why we were attracted to each other initially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they knew I was outed and never once talked to me about it. Which, honestly, it is a little hurtful to me, but they've never treated me poorly because of it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my ex and I were divorced. We were married too young.
Yeah.
Before we knew if we would be compatible or not. We're great friends. We still talk all the time. We weren't good as spouses.
Yeah.
And that's another, I think, quintessential Mormon thing. Get married really young and just hope that it works. And sometimes it doesn't. And unfortunately for us, I think we'd both internalized the idea of like, oh, you made these temple covenants, so you can't back out.
Yeah.
Even though it's not working, you can't back out.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. Things would have been better for us if we had gotten an annulment or a divorce as soon as we knew it just wasn't going to work.
Yeah. So where have you landed in terms of your spiritual life?
I think I am, according to the kind of strict definition, I am an atheist in that I don't think there is sufficient evidence that a god or deity exists. I don't make any claim of saying that there is or isn't. I just don't think that there is one because I haven't seen evidence to go and say that there is. I don't really believe in anything supernatural anymore at all. And I find an immense amount of comfort in that.
Tell me a little bit more what you mean by that.
When I was a child, I remember very distinctly, there's a words in a hymn saying, you know, the angels are notes taking over all the things you do and say. And I thought that was literally true. I thought I was literally being watched by angels, by all of my dead ancestors, by God. Everything I'm doing is constantly being scrutinized. And every time I mess up, I'm disappointing generations of my, you know, my forefathers. Or I think, at least for me, I always had to play the song and dance with supernatural claims of, well, for example, you know, a faith healing. If you're not healed, it's clearly because you didn't have enough faith. Or it wasn't the will of the Lord or something of that sort. It can't be because the faith healing isn't real. And so being able to just say, no, I am myself. I am my own being. There's no one else who is able to invade my thoughts. And I'm able to go and decide for myself what I think is right and wrong has been such a good thing. I guess an empowering thing and something which has made me feel like I really for the first time that I am actually acting morally.
And who defined that morality?
I think every person has to for themselves.
Yeah.
I think the greatest, I'm not going to say the greatest, I think a large disservice anyone can do is to offload their own moral judgments onto an external source, especially one that says that it cannot be wrong by definition. There are times when doing that is appropriate. If you don't have enough information, if you were a child and trusting your parents, like there are times where that makes sense. But you know, for adults, you need to be able to make informed judgments about things and be able to say against popular opinion sometimes, no, I think this is bad,
yeah.
Or I think this is actually good.
Yeah.
It's not that everyone's going to agree. I don't think there really are objective moral principles that apply everywhere. But I think that the ability for people to be empowered enough to say, I'm able to make these decisions for myself, despite what anyone else might say, is a wonderful thing and a fundamental part of being a moral person.
It's quite a distance that you've traveled. And to hear you talk about this place where you've landed, it's sort of beautiful to see this light at the end of the story, where there was a lot of pain, and I'm sure there was light along the way, but has ended in a place that has a lot more light, a lot more light in it than it seemed like there was in the past.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say. I think one of the ironic things is I really haven't landed even too far from a lot of the values I was taught as a Mormon. I have fundamental disagreements with several things. But in general, I don't think I'm even that far away.
Yeah. You know, we like to end every Becoming Wordless story by giving you a chance to share the one thing that you hope the people who listen to the story, whether they be family, friends, or other listeners of the podcast, that they take away from your story.
I hope that people can feel that they have the power to be their own moral agents, to say no when they think something is wrong, and to not feel guilty about doing that. Not being able to do that was personally very damaging in my life, and I hope that, at least in some way, I'm able to help someone else avoid that.
And there you have it. Thank you, Justin.
Of course.
Thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. Whatever your relationship with Mormonism might be, we appreciate you being here, and we hope you found this to be valuable. Becoming Wordless is a sub-series of the Wordless podcast. To learn more, or to find out how to feature your story on Becoming Wordless, please visit wordlesspodcast.com.